We're back.
Excellent. We're back. Now, if you've been joining us all day long, there's been a lot of information we've gone through, and hopefully you've had a chance to process some of this, because now we're going to add a couple of things to it. First of all, in this module, common questions that a lot of people have. We're going to just show you something to help you out as you're building your configuration scripts, the parameterization, making them reusable over and over, showing you how to secure credentials. That's a common question, both in the chat groups and in real life. And then taking a look at this thing called DependsOn. So let's take a look here at the screen at what we have. We are in module 6. We're almost at the end, writing better configurations. And we are going to, as I said, go through parameterized configurations, credentials, and getting the order straight with DependsOn, and letting you know some of the things that we're going to be doing in the advanced MVA tomorrow with building bigger configurations. So here we go, parameterized configurations, reusable. Matter of fact, you started this conversation earlier when we were doing the very simple ones, going, you know, you can parameterize that just like a function.
Yep, because it really is just a function.
It really is just a function that gets converted into this MOF configuration, right?
Exactly.
Which is exact. And again, once again, sticking with the promise that we can stick in PowerShell and they'll handle it underneath the covers for us. Let me show you an example of that parameterization, which you've seen, but let me just show you another one of it. So you can see it here. I will open this up. Take a look, I've got an LCM configuration. This can be a regular configuration, but this is for an LCM. And notice I've got the param block, just like if we were doing a function in here. I've got these parameters, I've got attributes for these. These are gonna be mandatory. I don't want this executing without computer name and without a GUID. This is when I was gonna set up a pull configuration. Also take a note here at the square brackets. These are binkies, I mean, these are square internal. These are, well, you know, So these simply mean that I could take multiple values, and notice down here, I'm only taking one GUID. So I've got these parameters set up, and when I want to use them, well, I can make the call from here, and I'll show you down here at the bottom. Here's where I can fill in the computer name. It can be multiple values, just like there. And there's the GUID, and these were the examples that we were using earlier. Now, this is making your configurations reusable, because I can create a pull configuration that I can now reuse for a bunch of different machines, making a bunch of different GUIDs, rather than, and you will see examples of this, and it's fine to do it for testing, where you'll see examples where the computer name is hard-coded, the GUID is hard-coded. You're not going to want to do that, though. You're going to make things reusable with the parameters. And in some of my examples, I have them hard-coded just for, that wasn't really the point or the focus, but when I sit down to do this, everything gets parameterized just like you would do with any other function.
Yeah, because here's the thing. Just as a function can call a function, so too a configuration can contain other configurations. And then when you call them, you'll want to parameterize them.
And that's a cool concept that we're going to get. Yeah, configuration call another config and you parameterize it. So yeah, it all goes through. Well, now the tricky part is we're going to talk about credentials. So a common occurrence is that you want to send a configuration that has a credential. Maybe you want to get to a target system that may not be a member of the domain, because we don't have to be with DSC. And so you need to send a different set of credentials to that machine in order to get the configuration to go, or whether it be an LCM configuration, or if you just want to push an additional configuration. So how do we send the credentials? Now, I just kind of want to warn you, I'm going to take you through this. This can get really tricky really fast, depending upon your knowledge, I'm going to say that word again, of PKI and certificates. But let's take this step by step and see if we can't work through this. First of all, let me bring up a script here on sending credentials. And I just want to tell you, I am doing this the wrong way right now, just so you can see the error message. As Jeffrey was mentioning, we want to see what it looks like when there's an error. Now, what I want to do is for this configuration called dir test, the resource I'm going to use is just the file resource. And I just want to see if a directory exists or not. I want to make it exist. But to get to this machine, I need alternative credentials. So I'd like to pass it some credentials. Well, I'm going to first of all parameterize that because I know I want to pass this configuration a set of credentials. So I'm going to use ps credential and put it in the variable $credential. Now, inside of this file resource, it takes credentials. So I'll give it that. So this doesn't look too difficult at this point. Matter of fact, looks very similar to most of the other configurations we've been working with today. I'll call that configuration, and now that I have created this credential, I now have the parameter that I can use, and I'm going to use the commandlet get credential. So it'll pop up and it'll ask me for the credentials. I'll output, this is where the moth is going to go, and then I'll send that configuration. So watch what happens here. This is going to be kind of interesting. I'm going to pop this up and I'm going to say, oh, that remote machine S1, it needs administrator. Would help if I spell it right. Administrator. And I got to put in the password for it. First thing that's going to happen here is I'm going to get a nasty error message. And this error message is kind of helpful. In a way. This is one of those good error messages. take a look, converting and storing encrypted passwords at plain text is not recommended.
Any guesses as to why? Bueller.
So obviously we all know this, right? We all know that storing password credentials in plain text is bad. But did you know that that's what we're doing? We're going to make this ASCII moth, and what it was going to do is take those credentials, and I'm going to show this to you. It's actually going to store them in that moth in clear text, plain text. Now, what it does follow on to say is, for more information, see, and here's what you're going to see that you can do. This is going to bring up a tricky concept that Jeffrey already started, and we want to talk some more about. Let me show you one way to solve this. I personally am not a fan of solving it this way because I want you to see what it's going to do. And then I'll show you another way. So let's I'm going to open up something called the configuration data. What I want to do is show you something about configuration data. Let me get these open here. Jeffrey started talking about this. I'm going to use this as a PSD1, and I'll show you why in a second. But Jeffrey, we have a concept of configuration data versus, you know, yep, what we're working with. I've got an example that I want to show them that can solve this problem, but what is this all nodes and the concept of this configuration data?
Yeah, okay. So we designed desired state configuration with a DevOps mindset. And in the DevOps mindset, you want to be able to configure your development environment, your test environment, and then your production environment using as much code as the same as possible. Okay, so what you want to do is the configuration for each environment, you want to factor out the code that is specific to each environment and then have common code that's common across them all. And you want that common code to be as much as possible. So we explicitly designed the feature to support that. And so the idea is we call the structural information that is the same across all the across the environments, and then configuration information. So when you define something, it's a way of passing parameters in a way that supports that model. So should we take a look at one of the examples?
Yeah,
which one do you have?
Well, I've got a real simple one to deal with the credentials, okay, and then we'll...
I'll show you my IntelliSense one.
Yeah, okay,
that'd be
great.
Just give you the structure. Okay, so show mine. And again, this is for the folks who downloaded the MVA module. You will have IntelliSense, and if you do Control-J, you'll see DSC configuration with configuration data, okay? So here, notice I'm creating a hash table, dev config, and there's a notion of all nodes, which is a set, and you basically have a hash table describing each node. So here's a node name, a role, a node name, and role, and you can even have configuration for node name star. And these are a set of attributes that will apply to everything, to all the nodes. And you can also include non-node data, okay? So that's this dev connection. Now here, I've just created a data structure, you know, just a simple plain old data structure. $ dev config, okay, it's just that data structure. Now, then what I do, let's hide that. I've got my configuration here. We're going to come back to that. But I'm going to define this configuration, and it's going to take as configuration data this data structure that I defined here. Okay, so it's a way of passing it as a parameter. Now let's see how that happens. When I pass configuration data here, a couple variables get defined. One is all nodes. Okay, so we go take that configuration data and we'll find the all nodes, we'll craft that, and we define it as a variable. And then we define, I guess we don't have one here. Within that, you have a $ node as well to talk about the specific right. one. Now, what this says is we're defining a node and we have a new type of expression here. So what it's going to do is it's going to get this data structure and it's going to do an inline filter and a selection. So that's new syntax. If you haven't seen it, we introduced that in PowerShell version 4. Let me show you an example. So $x equals get process. Okay, so $x. Okay, and you know how the trick here, $x where name like *ss. Okay, but we have a new syntax. That new syntax is a dot syntax. Oh, $x. Sorry, dot, bracket, $ underbar, where name like, do, I did that wrong.
Yep, nope, you got it.
Where,
do,
where, name like, *ss, voila. Okay, so that's the new syntax. And by the way, then we have the dot notation. Now the dot notation used to only work against singletons. Now it works against collections. I can say ID or name. Okay, so that's what we're doing up here. We're getting that all nodes, which again was $ dev config and dot all nodes. Okay, and then we're getting those where the role is equal to a web server, you grab the node name. So node requires a node name. And this is a way you go collect the node name. And so when you do this here, this is gonna can produce more than one node.
Right.
And it'll basically do a for each for you. So notice we don't have a for each here.
Right, exactly. And so this is going to load it with all of the different names that meet that criteria that was defined in your configuration data that now is going to get the IIS, the web server feature installed.
Exactly. So let's be clear. So that says, in this example, so when I do this, I'm going to set up a web feature, IIS, and I'm going to set up this file config for all the nodes. Now I did this for my dev. And you'll notice, in all nodes, I have one thing that's a web server. I might go and say, okay, that's great, but now what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna do test, just copy, paste. I'll create, test, and I might have 10 of these. Home, okay, copy, paste. Okay, I might say, hey, 2, 3, 4, okay? Now my configuration data has changed. Now I have 1, 2, 3, 4 web servers, but this stays the same, and this stays the same. And so now, sorry, I didn't need to say test here, test. Now for my test configuration, The script stays the same, but now all of a sudden it's going to apply to 4 servers instead of 1. And then production, yeah. It can be more. And so here's where you put the names, the IP addresses, et cetera. So that's what config's all about.
And that is
config data.
The config data is an awesome extension onto this. I know there was a lot of confusion around this when people started first to work with it. I was definitely confused. That helps tremendous amount. Now I'm going to use the concept the same, only a very small piece of it though.
Okay.
So if you take a look at my screen, what I'm going to do is I'm going to set up that same configuration data for all nodes. And notice mine's really simple. I did specify the node name S1 for this. And I want you to notice what I'm doing. When I looked up that error message and I followed the instructions, it's because what I need to do is tell it that PSDSC allow plain text password equals true. Yes, before you start throwing things at the monitor, I know. not to do this. I just want you to see what it's going to do. So this is going to be my configuration data. Oh, and I just had a production guy throw stuff at me. That's unfair, because I can't swing back. So I've got that configuration data, and I'm going to bring up the actual config file where we're going to use this. Now, I saved it as a PSD1, as a separate file, and if you take a look, I'm going to pass the credentials. I've got the same information here set up, but looky, down here at dir test, dash credential, and here's where I'm going to call that configuration data, and I'm calling up that PSD1 as the configuration data, and I'll put it out, I'm going to put the moth out to DSC secure. So let's see what happens when I do this. Now that I've solved, I think I have solved this problem, I'm going to go administrator, create a password, and it's going to come up, it's going to say, hey, I did it. I did exactly what, ta-da, looky, I made your little moth for you. I hope you're happy. And then I sent it, because I asked it to, I sent it with, sent the configuration out with start DSC configuration, and I set everything, it worked. It worked perfectly. Your state's now running. You got exactly what you wanted. You got woo-hoo. Exactly, no woohoo. No, sorry. You got exactly what you wanted, and you probably realize what just happened. Yep, it did exactly what I wanted, but let's go take a look at that moth. Now, I know I said this morning I wasn't going to show you a moth again, but I'm going to show you a moth again.
Because you lie.
Because I lie. So let me go and show you a moth again. You see anything weird about this moth? You see anything that you don't like about this moth? First of all, my name is all over this moth, so I'm very embarrassed at the moment. But look at what this moth has in it for the configuration data. Look, there's my password in plain text. And you saw this coming. You saw it coming when I configured it to allow plain text password. Am I passing credentials successfully? The answer is yes. Am I doing it the way it should be done? The answer would be no, absolutely not. And arg. So here's what we're going to try to do is we're going to try to do the credentials securely. In order to do this, we have to have a certificate that can encrypt the credentials for us so that when it gets written to the moth, it's not in plain text. Well, if we're going to have a certificate, that means everybody's going to have access to the certificate that we're going to talk to so that we can unencrypt and de-encrypt the password. This means, yeah, this is a PKI problem more than it is a DSC problem. One of the challenging things that people run into is getting this to work because you got to know how to work with certificates. Now, here's what I've done. Let me show you how we're going to solve this and the instructions that I've kind of added in for here. Now, one of the challenging parts is that you need to have a proper certificate. So I've got a certificate that's already issued. However, I want to point out, I wrote it out here for you. You need a certificate authority. You can issue a template for what's called a workstation authentication or client authentication certificate. Now, this template will then allow you to go to a machine that you want to use this on and add the certificate for that local computer. You can create and export that. In fact, I will show you really quick what I had done. And I think I was doing this. Let me call up my config so I make sure I check the right machine. Okay, I was doing this on S1. So let me show you S1 real quick. I think I may already have it. Yep. And yeah, I'm trying to show you this graphically. So I've already got a template from my certificate authority that's out there, and I'm going to start up the MMC. Let me get PowerShell going here. And you guys have used the MMC before, and I'm going to go into certificates and just show you how I got the certificate. So add, remove, snap in, certificates. And like I said, I have this written out. Not for my user account, this needs to be a computer account, so it goes into the personal store, the My underneath local computer. And I'm gonna tell it local computer, say okay. I'm gonna go into certificates, and I'm gonna go into the personal store. Now, usually if there are no certificates, you will not see the certificate folder. You can right click, say all tasks, and request a new certificate. And the certificate that I had requested for this is, let me click next. Is a workstation authentication. Now, if you don't see this listed, it's because you haven't issued the template from ADCS or your PKI solution. So you need to have the template first, Then you should see your workstation authentication. Once you get this certificate, you click here and say enroll, you're gonna get this. Here's my certificate, s1.company.pri, got issued by the DC to this, and this is intended purpose client authentication. Next thing I need to do though is I need this exported. So I need to get the public side of this available. So you can go over to export and export this certificate. It says do not export the private key, which is exactly what I want. Base64 encoded.cer, and then give me the path to export it. When you have that exported, you need to know what that path is. That'll get you the certificate and the public side of the key that you need to make this all work. Sound confusing? You're probably gonna wanna try this a couple of times in a lab environment before you start doing it in production. Some people work with this all the time, so it's much easier for them, but if you've never done this before, it's kind of tricky. So let's start to look at my new configuration. The new configuration data that I'm gonna use is all nodes, node name S1, what path? That path where I put that CER is where I want him to look when we're working with this. I'm going to then call up my configuration and make some adjustments here. So notice I got rid of all of the nasty allow clear text or the plain text passwords. This configuration, still the same. I'm gonna execute it all over again. And now let's watch what happens. So I'm gonna put in administrator, the password, say okay. And it tells me, yep, it ran the config, but this time let's go look at the MOF again and show you what that looks like. Whoops, I'm showing you the wrong MOF. It would help if I showed you the correct MOF. At least I think I'm showing you the wrong MOF. Here, let's see here. Let me just check here real quick, make sure I got the right one. Where did I put it? Config data out to, let me check my out path. Ah, DSC secure. So let's go look at the MOF at DSC secure. Oh, that is the right one. Let me see here. Ah, there it is. Take a look at this MOF. Now you can see that because I've got certificates. Password. What's that?
They can see your password.
They can still see my yeah, right. Yeah. So as you can tell, look at the password now. The password is still password. But now because I have certificates, that password has now been
obfuscated.
Thank you. I can't say that word. Has been hidden.
So that's a good one.
So if you want to pass secured credentials, can you do it? Yes. If you're just getting started with this, is this something you want to practice with? Yes. Does it work? Yes. But the certificate piece is usually the stumbling block. I just gave you the process to go through. So try that process and see if you can get the secured credentials to work. Don't send them unsecured. That would be
bad.
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 Bad. Bad. Think Sony.
Yo, oh.
Target.
Think Target.
Home Depot. Think bad.
Bad.
Don't do it.
And we know you guys already get that. However, if you're not comfortable with the certificate process, it's easy to kind of go, oh, I'll worry about that tomorrow. And tomorrow becomes 2 years from now when it's somebody else's job and nobody thought about it. Don't start with bad security. It's just not good. Just do it the right way when you get out of the gate.
Hey, can we go back? Are you done with the credentials?
Yeah, I'm done with credentials. We just have depends on left, so yeah.
No, I want to go back to config parameters because I don't think we nailed that.
Okay, you want to nail that?
I want to nail
it. All right, let's nail it.
Parameters are very important. So take a look at my screen here. Okay, so now I'm going to motivate why parameterization is interesting. So here I've got a configuration test one, and it's pretty simple, right? So here's a service, ALG. Its name is ALG. I want it to be state running, and it's ensure that it's present. Okay, so happy days, right? But wait, there's more to it than ALG. So now, all of a sudden, I want WinRM. And I want it to be running and present, and I want VDS, and I want this, and okay, so now all of a sudden, now you can imagine I got 10, 12, 20 of these things, right? And what happens if, I add an extra N in there, right? Like, are you gonna figure out?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, did you see, which one has the extra N?
Yeah, which one has the,
Okay, I forget which one has the extra N. Anyway, so this works fine, right? So let's just prove this. So I run this, I select this, hit F8, and then I can run test one, produces them off. Happy days. Good stuff. Okay? But there's a better way. And the other way, because remember, configurations can be parameterized. Because configuration, I define this thing called test one, and when I run it, it runs with a set of parameters. It runs and produces a document. Now here, I produced another thing. And I've said configuration running service set. Okay? So now it takes a parameter name, and it's gonna say for each dollar sign and a name, nice. Service. Remember that?
Yeah.
Remember that from up here? Service. And notice it needs a name. So I've already got a name, dollar sign N. Name, dollar sign N, ensure state equals running, ensure equals present. So we got a little piece of code here. So it's gonna generate a service resource with a name for each one of the names that get passed in as a parameter. Now remember, functions can call functions, configurations can call configurations. Now here's where it's a little tricky. It's actually not that tricky, it just makes sense, but I'll just point out, if I wanted to, I could do this. I could say running service set minus name, ABC, okay, ABC, created them off. But when I call it from a configuration, I can make it look like a configuration. So I say running set and my services, and then instead of having to say dash name, I make it look like a resource. So it looks like a resource.
So it looks like a resource.
Just like a resource. Yeah. And so now I just F8, and then when I say test two, it goes and it creates it. And now you're guaranteed that these are all configured exactly the same way.
Right.
It's a very same, and so you can add more, it's simplified.
We'll add that demo to the package. One of the things I really liked about this is that, as you showed, it not only simplified it, but now it removed the possibility of human error dramatically, right?
Exactly.
All of those runnings, all of those additional things. I mean, how many times do you want to put in the Windows feature, resource, and you're going to screw stuff up? Really nice pattern and method for optimizing that.
Exactly. Now, here's the thing about PowerShell and configuration is that this is actually the heart of it. This is the magic. We've been talking at the low level, atomic level of things, but its real power is this mixture of imperative and declarative code. Okay? That you can go and say, hey, I want to declare the way I want it to be, but then you can say for each and make it much larger. And you can have subroutines and you can create new abstractions. So then the question is, let's say I'm configuring something for some node. Do I have to say node and then put all the abstractions under that? I mean, what can I have this node in multiple places? And the answer is yes. You can call one configuration to define a certain set of attributes out of a node. And then in another place, you can call that again and have more attributes about that node and more and more and more. As long as you're calling them all within the same script, what's happening is PowerShell is keeping track of what did you say should happen to a node? Oh, collect it here, collect it here, collect it here, collect it here, and just keeps this all in memory. And then when you're done, it's like, okay, now I'll produce a coherent document saying all the attributes for a node. And so what's so nice about this is you might say, well, the way I think about it, I think about a very node-centric world. So I'm going to say node one, I want a web server, and I want this services, and I want these files, and I want this optional package, okay? And then node two, the same thing, and node three, the same thing, and node four, the same thing. And I've got a node-centric view of the world. Works perfectly. But maybe you think that way, but maybe I think, hey, IIS. Let's see, so IIS, I want node 1, 2, 3, 4, and then for this package, I want node 1 and 7 and 3 and 4,
yeah.
And then this service, I want 1 and 2 and 5 and 6, and I can configure it either way, and again, it all combines so nicely and just makes it work. And again, back to that part about when we first started, I talked about how at the end of the day, it's just PowerShell scripts. But it's PowerShell scripts that are written in a way that allow you to compose these things in arbitrary ways where they're not stepping on each other's toes. And so that's the real power. And it's a challenge for all of us as a community to say, hey, how are you organizing things? Like, that's why I'm so excited about the next PowerShell Summit. Next PowerShell Summit, ton. Everybody wants to talk about desired state configuration. I'm really looking forward to people coming up and saying, hey, here's the way I organize my configurations. And here's the benefits of organizing it this way versus someone saying, well, but if you organize it this way, you get these benefits. Because I think that's where the conversation is to be had.
And I think you're really hitting the nail on the head in a couple of different ways. It's actually really important. First of all, being able to have different patterns of creating these configurations based upon the way you're thinking about it or your needs makes a lot of sense. Now, a lot of people would say, well, you know, all of this different ways of doing stuff is too confusing. What's the one right way? We're not sure yet, and there may not be. And so I think you brought up a great point is we want to talk to people and find out, how are you doing it? How are you going to do it? How, you know, what are you doing with your configurations? And then exchange that information. And this is the time for that to occur. Basically, while we do have some best practices, it doesn't mean that you have to stop there. There are ways that you can go beyond this. So, and that you can work with this.
Yep.
Now, our last thing is I got a slide up for it, you know, getting the order straight. And I'm going to show this easy concept. Depends on.
Yeah.
Easy concept. Easy concept also to screw up completely.
Is it?
Well, I am going to, let's show you what it is.
Maybe for some people.
He's saying it for some people. He's doing one of those. Okay. So let me just kind of show you the idea of depends on. Depends on is available in all the resources, and depends on looks like this. So I've just got a couple of resources that I'm using. Notice the names of the resources. Windows feature IIS. I'm going to put in a management service for IIS. Put in the IIS console. Nothing too major here. And I've got a default website. But if you think about this, when a server is getting put together, sometimes certain pieces can't go on before other pieces have gone on. Now, that's not a hard concept. And if you take a look here, you can see I don't want to install the IIS management service until I have an IIS server. So we have this depends on, and if you take a look, depends on that this exists. And I think I have down here that I don't want to have the website files copied out to a folder that may not even exist until the web server is installed. So I have depends on web server. Now let me just kind of tell you where this freaked me out. First of all, depends on seems really straightforward. Don't do this till this is already done. All right, not a big deal. But when you're looking at a script, especially when you're working with PowerShell, you're so accustomed to seeing things. We do this, then we do this, then we do this, then we do this. And with a DSC configuration, that isn't how it works.
No.
We don't go down the list. I'm looking at these resources, and we're not actually just doing this, 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 and this. And this is the cool part to DSC. What do we do with all these resources? I got 5 resources listed here.
Yep.
If I didn't use depends on, what order do they go in?
We get to decide, and you can't depend on it.
So okay, that's the best part.
Let me
I love
be
that.
Really clear about this. So right now, we're kind of predictable, and that's a bad thing. Okay, so right now we're predictable. If you have things in a particular order, you can figure it out and you can know pretty certainly how things are going to play. Now, what that means is there's a possibility that you write a configuration, a resource provider that depends upon that order. Okay, and then if at some point, you know, we change our algorithms or somebody produces a configuration that produces a different order, it might break your resource. So that's that. I mentioned to you that there's a set of rules that you should apply. Could be that somebody doesn't follow those rules, but it still works anyway. So one of the features I'm asking us to go do is to actually randomize the execution of things just so that you can never count on an order. Like that would be a good thing. So literally, here's how it happens. You produce this document, and we have the resource A, B, C, D, E. And then we produce for you, if you don't need to care about any of this if you don't want to, but if you're a computer science geek, you're gonna love that stuff. We produce a directed acyclic graph of this stuff. So we take a look and we say, has anyone declared dependencies? And where there are dependencies, we know, these things have to happen before this happens. okay? And then we use that acyclic graph to then schedule the execution of things. And then we can run things in parallel if we like. Right now we don't, but we could run them in parallel. We can execute them in whatever order we want, as long as we respect the dependency flow graph that you set up through your dependencies.
And I think you hit the nail on the head, because you almost sound cruel when you say, we're going to randomize this because. I mean, we're going to randomize it so that if you depend upon the way you're writing this as to be the order, it's going to bite you. But the reason that you're doing that is to stop people from relying upon that top to bottom flow.
Exactly. It's the same reason why you
strap. Because you want to make it more powerful, and you don't want people to be having code-breaking experiences.
Yeah. The same reason why you like strap dynamite to your car. You know, you don't want any small accidents. Like, don't make that mistake again.
You want big accidents.
Yeah.
So
just create a world where, like, oh, don't do that.
Don't do that.
Yeah. And then by that affects a small group of people who are writing these resources. Then it produces a world where that's common and consistent and stable and predictable for everybody else. If there are any kind of hidden dependencies, that's not a good thing.
And I think what's kind of important is you'll see a lot of information, and you'll see in the community people saying, use depends on responsibly. And they're saying it in all seriousness because of the possibility that we know that this could change, where this flow is not going to be the way that things that happen. So when you're writing and you're putting your resources in, you probably already understood that I need to have this before I can have this. Just make sure that you're adding the depends on so that can be guaranteed at a later time. One of the best practices is always use depends on right now. So
did you show them the IntelliSense with it depends on?
Oh, I didn't show them wait a minute.
What? You didn't know that?
Well, no, what are you talking about with the IntelliSense on depends? I got depends on. I'm going to hit IntelliSense.
No.
No?
No, no, no.
No.
Oh,
no.
Here.
What?
Wait. So, okay. So first, we didn't even really show them the IntelliSense. So go to ensure equals present and cut out the present part.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I love this.
Okay.
So now, oops.
And then just single tick. Yeah.
Oh, I did. There you go. And so now you can select what I want, presence.
Yeah. Okay, now go down and get rid of that depends on.
That's what you wanted to show. Yeah. This is actually fantastic.
Now
because
this
made it a lot easier.
Now IntelliSense.
And it automatically gives me the list so I don't type it in wrong.
Yes, and so what it does is, you know, we, again, through the magic of the AST work that was done in the previous version of PowerShell, now we are able to do programmatic analysis of your script. And so we know the things that you can depend on. So IntelliSense knows that, so it says, here's what it is. Because we're like, well, what was that syntax? And do I put a bracket here? And do I put this first or that first? What the heck? You just pick it.
And one of the common mistakes that I've made, not just with depends on, but with each one of these resources as I've been working with them, is mistyping what was supposed to go in there.
Yeah, right.
And one of the best things, and it was it the February release where we got the IntelliSense at that level?
No, I think it was earlier.
Was it an earlier one? When I started using that as part of, like this whole script, I didn't have to think much.
Yeah.
Because the IntelliSense is
that's
doing
a good
it for
thing.
Me. Yeah, and that's and we all know now that's stop laughing back there in production. We all know now that it's a good thing that I don't have to think much, that the smart computer is doing the hard work for me, which was the point of computers anyways, right? That's what I'm saying.
It is.
So what we've done so far in this is we've gone through parameterization. You also took us on a great tour of parameterization and configuration data. We did credentials. Don't do plain text credentials.
Yeah. Bad.
And we talked about depends on. And like I said, depends on at first, if you were just to read a description of it, you're like, yeah, I get it. No, this is actually very important to use depends on responsibly the way it should be used, because you never know what's going to happen coming down in the future.
And what, tomorrow we talk about cross-machine dependencies, or is that today?
Cross-machine dependencies?
Depends on doesn't just restrict to the components on a machine. You can set up dependencies across other machines. There's a different mechanism, but you can say, hey, I want to set up a cluster, but before I set up the cluster, I need an Active Directory machine.
If you want to really quick, you can talk about it really quick here, because we don't actually talk about it tomorrow, but we have a couple of minutes. So it's the way it's, so let me just do a get DSC resource. It's
W.
dun 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 dun. Well, now I've got a ton of them.
Well, here you go. Wait for all, wait for any, wait for some.
Yeah, right here. Wait for all, wait for any, and wait for some. And this is your cross-machine dependency. So
exactly.
I can be building up and say, oh, wait a minute. Well, I'm just repeating your description. Now I feel like... But as my brain processes it now, I'm this far. I got to wait for him. Clustering is the perfect example, right? Yeah. And as soon as he reaches this point, then I can continue from there.
Yeah. And well, a domain join. You can't domain join until there's a domain. So you want to install, and you can't create a domain until you've installed things. So on a machine, you'll say, here's a domain I want to create. Oh, but first, I depend upon the Active Directory domain controller software to be installed, that feature to be installed. So as soon as that's installed, then I can create this domain. And then as soon as that's there, other machines can be waiting for that resource on that one machine. So you have this other machine, and just as like on this machine, I can say, well, this feature, this domain creation is dependent upon this feature being created. You can have some other resource say, well, I'm waiting for the domain to be created. In the same way that on that machine, you can say, I want to be waiting for this, use depends upon here. Another machine can wait for that resource to be created. And so it'll go talk to that machine, wait for that resource to be in that state, and then it'll say, now you can go. And so you'll see if you drill into waits for, you have the ability to express the machine, to be able to express retries and timeouts and things like that.
And I think those got added, and somebody in the chat rooms can correct me on this. I think those got added just after the November release with the knowledge update to the V4 DSC.
And it just hit me that we haven't discussed a critical element, and that's the notion of convergence. So imagine the case, timeouts motivates this. So I say, okay, I gotta get the domain controller in this state, and I got another guy over here who's saying, hey, I got a ton of stuff I gotta do, but I can't do any of it until that domain controller's up and I can join the domain, okay? And I mentioned to you, well, you do that through a wait for, and that there's retries, and then there's timeouts. It's timeouts. So what happens if timeout said, yeah, ain't gonna happen. Okay, and it fails. What then? And the answer is, and here's, again, part of the glory of desired state configuration, no drama, just try again. Back to this idempotence. There's another, the other flip side of idempotence is convergence, which is to say, hey, you get however far you get, and if something is a problem, either, hey, this took too long, or I had to go do some manual step, you just say, hey, pick up where you were and continue on. So say it got halfway through, it goes and tries to do the entire document again, but because of idempotence, it's gonna say, hey, test to see if this is the case. It's that case, move on. It's this case, move on. Oh, it's not that case, make it so. It now does the wait. Oh, it's now in that case, in that condition, so now continue on. So it's convergent. So basically you take most of the drama out of the errors in configuring large systems. Whenever you have large systems, you know, failure will be with us always. You will always have failure. And the nice thing about desired state configuration is it takes the drama out of the failure. Failure is an expected thing, not a big deal. Try it again and we'll converge. Not, let's see, it failed at step 3, so.
How much is done and what do I have to figure out now to undo or redo?
Exactly, just do it again.
Which was always part of a nightmare. Okay, it failed on that box and now I have to rerun this portion of it and this portion. And that's what you mean by taking the drama out, is
exactly.
I don't have to deal with that. It's gonna try its convergence and keep moving down that ladder, regardless of failure, until it completes its configuration
exactly.
document.
Exactly. Now, another element to this, the DevOps thinking, is as much as possible, you wanna configure and use your computers in a way that says, the DevOps guys have a wonderful phrase, they say, you should treat your servers like cattle, not pets. Okay, pets, you name, right? Pets, you name them, you cuddle them. When they get sick, you take them to the vet, you pay as much money as you can to try and save your pet. It's a terrible thing. Cattle, we don't do that with cattle. Cattle, we name cattle. When they get sick, we fire up the barbecue and we just get another cattle, right? There's just no emotional attachment whatsoever. And that's what the kind of the big shift of DevOps is. You want to shift to that model of treat your servers like cattle, not pets, okay? So what does that mean? So you create an environment where if something's wrong with that server, you give it a little bit, but remember, how did you get that server? And the answer was you start with a base configuration, and then you have a very well-defined, repeatable process to get it to a known state. So if something goes haywire, just whack the thing, start from that base starting point, apply the same operations, you're going to get to that known state. Now here it's worth talking about the Taguchi method. So I started off in the manufacturing industry in the 1980s. Now again, for you young people, you don't know this, but it turned out that prior to the 1980s, most products were just complete rubbish. I mean, they were just rubbish. Cars didn't work, they rusted after a couple of years, parts would fall off. I mean, just products, that was just the deal. Products were rubbish. And then the Japanese started the quality revolution. Now, the interesting thing was they imported the quality mindset from a number of Americans, Deming, et cetera, but they were the ones that really applied it. And the quality of the Japanese cars just was far above anything the Americans were doing, and then their electronics, et cetera. And all of a sudden, holy schmoly, they have great things. And I was as part of the process, the manufacturing process, as we tried to pick up the quality revolution and bring American products up to that standard, which, by the way, we've done exceedingly well. Now, you're surprised when products don't work, right? Because the quality's so high. Now, one of the techniques was the Taguchi get method. Now, Taguchi was a Japanese quality engineer who basically said, the most important thing to improve quality was not getting things right, but getting things consistent. Okay, so think about that. The most important factor in improving quality was to not get things right, but to get things consistent. And so he was solving the problem of how to get a transmission made it up to a particular part in a car. And they kept trying to, well, here's where I need it to be. How do I get it there? And sometimes they would, and sometimes it'd be off, and sometimes it'd be off, and sometimes it'd off. And so he says, stop trying to get it exactly where it is. Just get it somewhere perfectly consistently, and then we can redesign the other part, right? We'll just move it. If you can always get it there, I'll make it so that the other part's there. But then what he said was, okay, now as soon as you have a consistent, repeatable process, a process that produces a repeatable result, then it allows us to change it, introduce a small change, and take a look at the result. And if you don't like the result, back out that change. If you do like the result, keep doing it, and then do it again. Make another small change. Do you like that one? Keep it. Do another one. Do you like that one? No, stop doing it. And you step by step by step. The number one factor in improving quality is consistency. So how does that relate to servers? Consistency. You start with a well-known image. You apply a well-defined set of steps and you get to a state. Do you like that state? Great, keep doing those things. If not, change the steps. Do you like that change? Yes? Keep doing that. And so the point is that if at some point you get to an environment, the running of the system or some admin came in and messed things up, it's no longer in the state, because you have a repeatable process, you just whack that system, you start from the known state, you repeat the processes, you get to the known state, and happy days.
And this is where servers are cattle, because now you've got a repeatable, consistent process where you just go, make me some more.
Exactly. Now, it's quick to point out there, not all things work as well in that environment. So sometimes wherever there's state on the machine, but that's the point. You want to design your systems so that you can do this. So think about that. So maybe the answer is, a part of my repeatable process is to always be able to get the state off that machine, whack the machine, and bring that state back on. So, you know, we've had the migration toolkit for quite some time now. Maybe you incorporate that, you know.
Exactly. I love that. And folks, for our last slide on this, just as kind of a, well, It's kind of a sneak peek at what we're going to do tomorrow. It's building bigger configurations. Now, I've got a couple of things in here that aren't just specifically towards configurations. I'm just going to tell you what we're going to do tomorrow. We're going to start building our own custom resources. So the next MVA is going to be advanced. We're going to build our own custom resources, like in nested resources, and then we're going to start building configurations. I know it says composite resource, but it's kind of an interesting configuration. And one of the new things that are out that Jeffrey started talking about today that is really important are partial configurations. So we're gonna show you how to build bigger and better configurations with your own custom resources that you can build. So if there's not a resource out there, you can make your own and now get it into this DevOps process that Jeffrey was just talking about of, well, making cattle.
Yeah.
Like that. I like that a lot.
And you'll see, so now I'm just gonna give you a little hint here, just a harbinger of wonderful things to come. As we develop these resources, you'll see you do it through script, and there's a couple things you know, a little bit of housekeeping that you have to keep in order. And so one of the things we did was we said, we want to make that housekeeping automatic. And so we introduced in PowerShell version 5, the notion of classes. Okay, so PowerShell now supports classes, specifically to support creation of desired state configuration resources. It makes it much simpler and provides a lot of you, like a lot of you developers, like a bunch of operators just love PowerShell as is. A lot of developers look at it and say, hey, why do you do that? Why do you do that? Et cetera. I wish it had more of a developer feel to it. And you'll see how PowerShell classes provide much more of a developer feel to things, more developer rules, really quite nice. By the way, if you're an operator or a scripter, don't worry about that. You'll be able to learn these things, and I think you're going to love it as well. So it's really one of the most exciting things we've done in PowerShell version 5. Of course, the higher bit is desired state configuration, but in service of desired state configuration, we have advanced the language to have classes, and I'm telling you, you're just going to love it. You won't be shocked at what you can do with it.
And you're going to see that and a whole lot more tomorrow as well. But ladies and gentlemen, it's time for us to wrap up this module because you know what's next, our very last module. And we're not taking the easy road on this last module. This is some of the mystery that people never thought could happen. It's time for cross-management platform management.
Dogs and cats come together.
Come together.
Love and harmony.
We're going to hug each other, hug it all out. We're going to love everybody because we all got to work together in a business environment. So when we come back, we're going to take it to Linux and something incredibly special that we have been hiding from you.